Two. Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, depending on where you're listening. This is the EVT Padres podcast, episode 175. It is March 30th. I am Clark Farenthold. As always, I am joined by my co-host and creator of the East Village Times, James E. Clark. James, how are we doing today?
What's going on, Clark? A beautiful rainy day in San Diego. I know some people don't like the rain, but I think it's a refreshing change for cleans out the area, you know?
Definitely. You know, I'm actually one of those people. I don't know. I like the rain and I wouldn't mind just like a little drizzle for the Padres game tonight. So when I'm sitting back, I don't feel so bad about just laying and sprawled out on the couch, watching the game, taking in my observations. So right. I'm one of those people who are also a proponent of the rain, but I'm definitely a proponent of the Padres, hopefully picking up another win here in the series against the Giants. Yeah. Dropped last night's game to San Francisco. Definitely a little bit disappointing. I think a lot of people were hoping they'd ride the momentum of the comeback they had yesterday. Or the day before, I should say, and, you know, keep bleeding it out against San Francisco, but not really how things worked out. But I did want to ask, through these first two home games that they've had, what are some of the things that maybe you've liked? Maybe give me one thing you've liked and one thing you didn't like, and I can do the same. But first off, let's start off with something that you've liked so far from these first two home games.
You know, I like seeing Jake Cronenworth driving in runs. I really do. I think that's going to be pivotal for this team. Batting in the middle of the lineup, being the sole lefty in the top four, if you will, he's going to have to produce. I'm still a little weary of him for the long-term projection, but I'm satisfied that he's able to drive in runs when they need it and become that clutch hitter that they need to have hit in the number three spot. I mean, that's no joke in Major League Baseball. That's a respectful position in the batting order, and you need to be able to produce, and he's done it so far, so... So far, so good. We'll have to wait and see. As far as concerns, I would say maybe bullpen usage. I don't know if I want to exactly blame the manager or if I want to just, you know, it's early. You know, just because a guy has a bad appearance his first time out doesn't necessarily mean he's going to do that the rest of the year. So it's something you got to take with a grain of salt, but it's, you know, something that we're probably going to cover in this podcast later on a little more in depth about the bullpen. But the bullpen is definitely a slight concern to me.
Definitely. You know, I will definitely echo your thoughts on Jake Cronenworth, though. I think for a year that we both agreed was going to be pretty pivotal for him. I think most Padres fans across the landscape would agree. This was a not make or break, but certainly one of those years you look at for Cronenworth and you're like, all right, we need you to produce. And through just four games at this point, I've liked what I've seen. Only a 10.3% whiff percentage, which is, you know, garnering the rest of the league. He's only played about two games. It's 95th percentile. So he's doing what I had hoped, which was break his superpower back out from his first couple of years, which is not swinging and missing. He's barreling the ball all right. 9% barrel percentage through this point in the year. That's solid just through four games. And then everything he's putting in play too, he's got a pretty hard hit percentage of about 50%. So Jake's doing his job right now in the middle of the lineup. He's yielded some results. Obviously, everyone will look to the home opener that he had, the two RBI doubled on the right field line. I think that's encouraging for him, certainly. I think overall, though, what you've seen, even a little bit in the loss last night, just a little bit more resiliency from the offense. Again, we've talked about it before, but you know, last year this team would seemingly roll over. You know, it's a one-run deficit. That game's over. Two-run deficit. Three-run deficit. You felt like, there's no shot. But, you know, even in the moments with Manny's homer and then Fernando's two receding, you know, home runs after that, it felt like just a little jolt. You felt like there were some moments there that they could capture on. And I think for me, just seeing, you know, the offense be scrappy, the offense sticking with it, not just rolling over, was, you know, it's not the biggest thing in the world, but it's important. No. And I think it just shows a little bit more of growth and how the roster could be different, at least on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely early. It's first four games of the year. So we can't say this. They've made the change. Hallelujah. This is a new philosophy, but you are seeing a little bit of a different approach, and that's nice. That's very nice to see. You wonder how much of that is the new hitting coach, who's has experience with high level teams, high energy teams like the Red Sox and like the Indians. So we'll have to wait and see. But so far, so good. A 2-2 record is not the end of the world for this team. In both games, they honestly could have won. And so, you know, you look at it that way. I know last night's game, they kind of got behind early and Harrison was tough for them. Let's talk a little bit about their approach with Harrison, because Harrison's a young pitcher. You know, you see the velocity numbers, 94, 95, it doesn't impress you, mm-hmm. but he pitches up in the zone. It has a lot of spin. I know you're an analytical guy, so describe to me the approach that they needed to take against someone like that and the adjustments that you saw them making last night.
You know, I just think when you look at a guy like Harrison, I'm a little bit surprised they went with, you know, like basically no left-handers in the lineup. Because while he has dominated left-handers in the minors, he has this weird split against in the major leagues where he's dominated right-handers in the majors and then struggled against them, you know, on the flip side. So but for me, what I saw from Harrison was just a guy that was doing a good job of tunneling. I think he worked well up in the zone. I think it's a big thing for a guy that doesn't necessarily throw super hard. But what's important to me with him is his extension. Like that ball gets on guys quicker because of how much extension he gets off the mound. Exactly. And I think that was playing really big for him. I think too with Harrison, which was, and it's a problem that San Diego has as a whole, is that we don't seem to hit the fastball very well. And we haven't for a couple years. Yeah. And Harrison, again, when you have that added extension, he's got good IVB. You know, the ball is rising up in the zone, making it hard to barrel. I mean, we struggled again. I mean, the balls that Fernando and Manny hit out, even the one off Tyler Rogers, you know, the second one that he hit out, those are all breaking pitches.
Yes.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's been a theme with San Diego for a little bit here is that, you know, we haven't had a guy that just crushes a fastball mistake that often. A lot of the balls we hit out off speed pitches.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Manny's first at bat, he was essentially blown away by fastballs and looked late on him. And sure enough, throws him a hook and he jumps all over it. So you got to wonder if they're going to be able to, I mean, if we're making this simple assumption, other major league teams certainly are, and they're going to attack them in, they're going to attack them with hard stuff and they're going to make weak outs in that regard, especially with runners in scoring position when they need to be able to drive the ball and not make weak contact out. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Harrison was blowing the ball by a lot of their hitters and,
yeah, it's tough with a guy like, again, too, because he's got, I mean, they had a lot of success off him last season when they did face him. They got six earned runs. Granted, a couple of those came off home runs for, I think, like Soto and Sanchez, who aren't on the team anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just seems like guys like that, even in the past, like when the Giants had thrown Alex Wood, who I always thought was okay, but just his ability to mix pitches and kind of just keep us off our feet, we haven't been great against. And Kyle Harrison's better than that, I think, but it's sort of a similar repertoire and arsenal that we struggled with again. So again, it's difficult to, you know, make concrete ideas off of, you know, one or two games, but I think the fastball thing certainly overall is from last, it's not just this year, it's a couple seasons now where I've sat there and been like, we don't crush mistake fastballs like other teams do.
It is odd. And they're not 99, 100, 101 mile per hour fastballs. They're 95, 96. And like you say, groove down the middle, and you wonder, what are you looking for? A 3-1 pitch, 2-1 pitch. Why would you be late on that pitch? So
I agree.
I don't know.
You know, I think it might too, at least in recent seasons. The Padres obviously as a group are really like they're selective. They really want to be patient at the plate. And I think that's good. Mm-hmm. But again, it sort of goes back to this patience to a fault where sometimes they do take those 3-1 fastballs where it's just like, man, that's center cut. Like as a hitter and you've gotten a 3-1, you've earned the opportunity to go ahead and try to lean back and drive one.
Sure.
And sometimes they just take it. And I think sometimes it encourages major league staffs against us. They know that they can get an easy strike with us at the fastball because we take it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, for right now, Harrison definitely sort of ate our lunch yesterday outside for a couple home runs. But, you know, he's just a guy that we didn't see well, I guess. I don't know. And I think I would have honestly, I mean, I get keeping Jackson Merrill out of the lineup, but I kind of would have liked to see him in that spot. But I get it again. You don't want to crush the kid's confidence, make him go against the left hand. It could have worked out one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a tough at bat for him conceivably. But then again, you never know. I mean, you mentioned Soto homered off him last year, the success that lefties have had in a small sample size against him. I don't know, something maybe a right-hander is not picking the ball up as well as a left-hander out of his arm. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know. They're going to have to try something new though. Let's talk about the bottom of that lineup and the concerns that are rightfully so. You know, there's three or four guys on the offensive roster who arguably shouldn't even be in the major leagues at this point. And we're talking about, you know, Wade and Pauly and Rosario and and Azokar for that matter. I mean, I have nothing against Jose Azokar, but I don't necessarily want to see him start. I don't necessarily want to see him in that fourth outfield position. I mean, maybe as a fifth outfielder, defensive replacement late in the game, but the bottom of the lineup is going to be problems with this team if they don't improve it. Straight up.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, it's okay, as you said, to have Azokar be your fourth or fifth outfielder. It's okay, even for a guy like Jurickson Profar, to be your fourth or fifth outfielder. Yeah, but you can't really expect a team to make the playoffs with those two guys getting regular at-bats in your lineup.
No.
And again, I've liked Tyler Wade. Commend him. He's done a good job here in the first couple games.
Definitely.
But he's also one of those players where I sit there and say, all right, this is a good couple, you know, it could be a good month. But do you see him playing for this team, crucial at-bats, crucial innings in September? And I can't really say yes to that right now. And then to the other name that you mentioned.
Fire and just has an amazing year. I mean, which is, it's just always possible. It's is baseball. It's always
but
possible.
If I was betting on it, I think if we were both betting on it, I don't think we would sit there and be like, oh, Tyler Wade, yeah, he'll be an integral part of this team when it comes down to it. Yeah. But
And you definitely want, you can do that when you have the rest of the lineup already formulated and well-rounded, and you can take a chance on that. But at this point, there's questions all over the place. I mean, we don't even know what you're going to get out of Camposano for a full year.
Yeah.
And that's the guy who you're counting on in the middle of the lineup. So let alone seventh, eighth, and ninth in the lineup, which are, you know, I don't mind Merrill on the bottom because he's proven that he deserves to be here and deserves a chance. But that's another player who, what's the upside on him on his rookie year? I mean, you don't expect him to be an all-star his rookie year. I mean, you shouldn't at least.
You know, I think, like, in my mind, I would be fine, you know, if this was a more complete starting nine that you had like Rosario and a Pauly who are younger guys, but like even for Pauly right now, like he's not in the starting lineup again today. And I've maintained with this, especially with young guys, like if you're going to be here every day, you got to play every day because it's for one thing, I feel like it's so crushing to young players' confidence that you get one at bat every 3 days. Yeah. And if you punch or you don't make the most of the opportunity, then you're sort of in this weird hole of like, man, like I'm overmatched. I'm sucking. I can't do anything.
Every at bat needs to be a home run because I need to prove my worth. And
exactly. And I just think like I love Pauly, and I think he did earn his spot. But it's like if you're not going to play him, what's the point of having him up here? Like just let him get regular at bats.
See, the only thing I'll say about Pauly is that El Paso is not playing right now.
No,
he wouldn't necessarily get regular at bats. He would be playing in the minor leagues. He'd be playing exhibition games. Maybe they feel that having this major league experience would help him later on in the season when they plan on calling him back up, that he'll already be through this, gone through the first hit, gone through the trial period, if you will. But honestly, when El Paso starts, I would assume that both Pauly and Rosario will be down in the minor leagues getting regular at bats, or at least they should be if they want to handle them properly. Because they're just not doing anything sitting on the bench. And then when you look at in key situations late in the game, I don't want to have a rookie coming in key situations when you need to drive in a runner, when you need a quality at bat that you just can't expect them to produce. It's just
it's asking a lot of them. It's just asking a lot. And it's not a knock on, oh, they shouldn't. Because again, I think deservingly for Pauly's sake, he's earned the right to be here, but you're putting so much on that kid's shoulders to ask him every third day, if maybe every second day, like, we're going to need an at-bat here, critical in the seventh inning. You got to put it together. That's a lot to ask, no matter who you are, whether you're, you know, top 10 prospect in baseball or your guy just coming up from AA, you know, who's been hot. So, it's, again, I don't, the bench, I think I agree. There's guys on there that you can say like, God, should you be on a roster maybe? And, or guys that are sitting there like you're getting, you know, regular playing opportunities when you're probably a fourth or fifth outfielder. And I don't know how that they address it. I'm sure Preller is probably thinking of a way. Cause I mean, there has to be something that they're working on. Cause again, why not sign Pham at this point?
Yeah. Honestly,
if you don't have something you think is another option.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this will happen once El Paso starts and once Manny's proven that he can play third base the majority of the week, you know, because that creates an issue in itself. Manny is a gold glove defender. You want him on the field. You want him out there. You don't need him taking up a spot where you should potentially have an offensive force as a DH. And right now, what's going to happen if Manny goes to back to third, then who's the DH? It's a rotation of garbage, if you will. I mean, they need offensive players out there. They need offensive players. They need veteran presence. If you seriously want to compete late in the season, you need veterans. And then we're not even talking about playoffs. I mean, the playoffs, you want people in there that have a track record of success, that aren't afraid, that can do the little things in this game that we've talked about that really do mean a lot. It's early. So that's all I can say.
No, I agree. It's very early, and I still think they're probably going to move some pieces around. I mean, I know people are like, oh, like, why don't they bring in Brandon Bell? But I don't think that's going to be a possibility at this point. That's been thrown around way too long. I think the money that he wants is probably out of the realm of possibilities for what we're willing to give. And because of financial constraints, I still stand behind the idea of, you know, Pham should be here. There's no really reason for Tommy Pham not to be signed at this point. Unless there's
I'd rather have Pham starting than Profar. I mean, at this point, Profar, I mean, is more effective off the bench as a rotation piece, not a everyday player.
You know, I think even like, you know, Profar started and left for us in 2022 when he put together a good year. But, you know, obviously last season he was a -2 F4 player for the Rockies.
Well, you're a big stat guy. Exactly. Well, look at his 2022 years. They might have been a big year, but what but were his?
It's big year in a relative sense. Exactly. So I mean, it's a big year for Jerks and Profar, but it wasn't. I don't know, left field production across Major League Baseball is down, but obviously we're in that area too, because we have Jerks and Profar out there a little bit more often. I think most teams want Jerks and Profar out there. No disrespect to him, because I think if he was a bench player, he'd be more valuable than what he is right now. That's his role, but he's being forced into a starting spot at the moment. So, but I don't know. It's tough. Again, it's hard to see how things shake out after it's just only been four games for us. But I agree. The bench needs to be amped up. The depth needs to be better at the major league level. So.
Yeah, and the bench needs to be amped up by the starters being amped up, so that Profar and etc. can go to the bench and perform in that area. And the Padres need outfield depth. They honestly do. They really need outfield depth. If God forbid, Fernando Tatis Jr. went down,
that'd be so bad. If Fernando gets hurt,
it would be. I don't know what they would do. They would have three of the worst.
You would lose your best defensive, arguably, player, because you won the Platinum Glove last year, and your best offensive player on the roster at the exact same time if Fernando Tatis Jr. gets hurt at any point.
And at a position in the outfield where they really have no depth at all. Like, no depth. None. No. There's nobody in the minors that can. I mean, Tirso Ornelas is down there, but I mean, it's the same.
You're really going to call him.
Bringing up a player who's unheralded that maybe can produce, you just don't know.
It's a big question mark. No, AJ Preller, I agree.
Got to be on the phone right now. He should be on the phone right now talking to someone.
You know, I agree. And I think, you know, one of the other things we wanted to talk about, too, in terms of just a depth standpoint, was the bullpen. I think, too, that's another place you can look right now where maybe you wish there was a little bit better depth overall, and that would be in the Padres bullpen. I think you've seen, much like the bench, you're giving opportunities to some guys. Last night, Kaloric, where it's like, or Brito in game one, where it's like, man, should they be there in that moment? And again, I just feel like maybe they give some of the guys in AAA, like Estrada or Reynolds, an opportunity, but I don't know. I've been a little bit discouraged off what you've seen so far. Like, again, I'm confident in guys like Peralta. I'm confident in Matsui. I'm confident in Suarez. But once you get past Cosgrove, definitely confident in too. I mean, but after you get to that point where you're like, what are we dealing with here? It's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, and the odd thing is that there's three lefties and your closer. So, you know, you want a right-handed veteran presence in there. I guess that's what Steve Wilson would have represented.
Yeah.
That was a key piece to the White Sox in the Cease deal. Someone's going to have to step up. De Los Santos, Estrada down in the minors.
Yeah,
Avila, Waldron. I don't. Someone is going to have to step up and be able to perform as a right-handed setup reliever, or also just going to have to throw those three lefties out there in high leverage situations and pray for the best.
I agree. I mean, I think last night one of the things was a little bit concerning on like Kaloric. I forget. I always botch how you say his last name, so I apologize for that.
Kolek.
Yeah, we'll go with Kolek. But the one thing is, he's a guy who's generates a lot of his, you know, whiffs off spin and getting guys to chase outside of the zone. He had a 0-0 swing percentage last night from hitters. He didn't get anyone to chase. I mean, he had whiffs in there. He worked a couple in, but he didn't get anyone to go reach and extend outside of the zone. The zone contact, I believe, was at 100%. So it's not great at what you want to see from him. And then, you know, I liked what I saw from De Los Santos, but I mean, again, I thought he was solid, but I think maybe that's the guy you start relying on a little bit more in like the sixth or seventh thing, because he is your veteran arm of the group, and he just has a track record of being successful in Cleveland. But, you know, and then throwing an Avila again, what was it, the eighth or the ninth? Like, that's, again, that's not Avila's role. He's a guy who's like long relief. He's someone who's a spot starter for you. Why is he in that spot? I get the game's a little bit out of hand at that point, you could say, maybe, but that's not where he's worked. That's not where he was in spring training. So why is he there? I don't know.
It's, again, it's early. Roles are going to have to be determined. Roles, people are going to have to step up and execute and perform in these roles. I feel confident that they have these three left-handed pitchers that can perform out of the bullpen, but you do want to see a right-handed a right-hander in there in high leverage situations. You just do. You don't want to throw out a lefty against the middle of someone's lineup when the middle of their lineup is three right-handed hitters. That's a tough ask.
I think the guy that I said it last time, I think the guy that you hopefully bring up soon is Alec Jacob. He's your right-hander in my mind.
Yeah.
That's your guy. Yeah. I mean, if he's healthy, I think last night in for El Paso got the save, 60% whiff percentage on his pitches.
Deceiving. He's deceiving as well.
He's deceiving. Again, he's not like, I always do wish, like, and I hope maybe a guy like Reynolds or Estrada at some point becomes this, a guy who can just fire BBs in there 99, 100 miles an hour. Like, good luck, try to hit it. But Jacob is a guy who's just, in my mind, the right-handed Tom Cosgrove. I mean, he's deceptive. His spin is nasty. When he got to see him against a good Blue Jays team last year, he had George Springer down on one knee at two pitches. Yeah. So it's like, if he's healthy and you need a right-hander and someone who can be consistent, give him a shot as soon as possible, because he's shown all of that to you. Granted, again, it's a small sample size. I'll say that. But that's what Alec Jacob is. And having him just sit in El Paso right now, I'm like, what's the holdup? Especially if this continues, it's like, how long do you wait until you bring him back up?
Yeah. There's players that aren't on this roster, or there's players in the minor leagues that are going to be vital members of this team when it's all said and done, and they haven't established themselves yet, or haven't, coaching staff hasn't taken notice of them yet. But there's going to be players like Cosgrove who stepped out of nowhere last year and were valuable members of this rotation. You have to trust the process and Preller and Chris Kemp and those in the minor league system that are developing these young arms, and the Padres do have plenty of young arms that
they do, are capable
of performing. So we'll have to wait and see. You know, I think the offense is the main issue right now. So I think that should be their main focus when it comes to trades. Mm-hmm. If they can add a veteran reliever in a trade along with an outfielder, that would be excellent. So we'll have to wait and see. I mean, AJ Preller, like I said, should be on the phone right now and should be discussing different scenarios for sure.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just, I know it's only been four games, but it's like, you can already see, again, unless these things have resolutions here relatively soon, and in a dramatic way, there are still certainly ways that this roster needs to be improved. I'm sure he recognizes that. I hope it's just a matter of time until you see some of these additions come in. Like, you see a fam, you see maybe a trade for a relief arm, you see a call up of a guy like Jacob. But you know, that's the way it is. You know, one of the things that is not going to change, and the Padres are also going to need to improve on, is the starting performance of Joe Musgrove. It has only been two starts for Joe this season, but in those two starts, not great, which hurts me to say, because as a fellow San Diegan, grew up in San Diego, it's tough for me to watch Joe Musgrove struggle, but that is what he has done through two games. I'll ask you first, James, from what you saw, from your observations, either from this game and really just his collective two starts from the season, what has been the problem in your eyes with Joe Musgrove?
Location is the main issue. I mean, I'm worried about an injury. Obviously, last year he did not or was not able to end out the year on the staff. He had a shoulder injury, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. He's a slider guy, slider you to death kind of guy. And historically, sliders lead to arm issues. I'm really concerned about that. He seemed a little timid last year or last few starts in using it, like I want to see him use it. It kind of just rolled up there. You're the analytics guy. You tell me what were the spin rates? Were they down? Were they up? I mean,
it was sort of not a complete start of two halves, but he was getting barreled basically every time the first two to three innings. I don't think he generated a swing and a miss his first 20 pitches of his start. Exactly. The spin rate on the slider was down immensely. That was down 627 RPMs for his first two innings. He got an expected batting average off of him in the first two innings, I believe, of 435. Guys were not deceived. And again, Joe has, he doesn't have great velocity. He is, you know, solid. He's 93, you know, 94 when he needs it. Yeah. But he's a guy who relies on the slider. He's a guy who relies on the cutter, the curveball, the sinker. And in the first half of his start, no one was biting. And they were swinging early, and they were recognizing it out of the hand. But to his credit, on the second half of his start, he did sort of figure it out, which I think if you were to take anything encouraging, it's that. All of the RPMs by the time he got back to his, you know, finished his outing 5 2/3, almost getting to the sixth, they were back to this year's yearly average. There wasn't any sort of dramatic tip off.
It, it must have been the shoes actually, then. It must have been the shoes. I saw he changed his shoes. It had to have been the shoes, right?
Something. So he generated at the end of the start 12 whiffs, a 14.3 swinging strike percentage, which is good, and a 34.5 CSW percentage. So it was in total not a great or good stuff day, but it was okay. It ended up being a little bit redeemed after what he was able to do in the second half of his start. And there was a really interesting stat that Jesse Aguilar brought up on the radio. I don't know if you heard this, but Joe, in starts where he is on regular rest, at least he was last season, he posted an ERA of 2.01, where he didn't have interrupted. It was his normal 4-day rest. Though in that same time last season, if he had an extended rest, he had an ERA above 5, I believe, in those starts.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe in these first two starts, part of it is contributing that, all right, you had this weird long break between Korea and now. You had to go all the way over there from your last start in spring training over to Korea and have another extended, you know, delay. And even last season, he had 4 of his first 5 starts. He gave up 3 or more earned runs. So if you're trying to be, you know, spin zone on this, maybe to an extent, you're saying to yourself, he's a slow starter. This happened last year. He can bounce back. But in truth, I'm like you. I'm concerned about the shoulder. That was not a small shoulder injury last season.
No.
And when you have such dramatic drop-offs in spin for a guy who is so reliant on spin, it makes you worry because, you know, the season only gets longer and you only throw more innings and you only get more wear and tear on that arm.
Yeah.
You know, where does it get better? I don't know. It's concerning in my mind. It's not, you know, something just to brush under the rug. I mean, I love Joe, but it's something to keep an eye on, certainly.
Yeah. You know, the Padres are keeping tabs on this and are asking him if he's having any discomfort or wondering what the issue was with the spin rates. That's concerning. You wonder if, you know, did he have trouble warming up? Was it trouble getting loose? And then he finally got loose and was able to get his spin rates to where it needed to be. I don't know. There's really no answers. And Musgrove is a bulldog. He's the type of pitcher who's not going to complain. No. He's not going to come out until he really is hurting. So that's what last season's issues and not ending the season were a huge concern for me. No surgery was done, no formal rehab. He might have, you know, done some rehabbing on the side and worked out a different way and strengthened different muscles, if you will. But there was no under the knife, no procedure done. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. It's definitely a concern moving forward for this team because you want Musgrove to eat up innings. You want the native San Diegan in there as much as he can because he's a leader of the staff.
Definitely. I will agree with you too. You brought up as your first point, a command was a huge issue for him. I mean, he's usually a guy who hits the spots with regularity in those first 2 or 3 innings.
A lot of changes.
That wasn't the case.
Change ups
up in the zone.
Yeah. You know,
balls just in the middle, not in the shadows where he typically lives so much. No, he was hard of the plate and they were not missing. So he was able to, again, I'm a little bit encouraged by the fact, again, that he was able to recover in the second half, bring those spin rates back up, get more whiffs, get guys to chase again. That's the Joe that I recognize a little bit more. But still, as a whole, you can't ignore it. It's something that's there at this point.
No, and Aguilar brings up a good point. Maybe he was overthrowing. Maybe that's what resulted in the spin rates being down. He's just too amped up. I don't know. Maybe being fatigued produces a better Joe Musgrove out on the mound. That certainly happens with some pitchers because some pitchers can overthrow and need to be at 80%, 90% in order to be their best. So we'll just have to wait and see, but you're going to want to keep tabs on him the next few starts moving forward. Definitely check spin rates. Definitely check the usage of that slider and make sure that he's able to use it, because that's his bread and butter, is that slider.
Yeah, and I think I read, you know, earlier this morning, I think it was with the UT, I think it was a story that AC had written, but he took full ownership of that. He's like, it's an issue I have to fix, especially in the command end. He's like, I can't miss there. I mean, he's and again, Joe's a pro's pro through and through. I mean, this is a guy who's been at the top of the World Series. He's the thrower, you know, the franchise's first no-hitter. He takes responsibility for it every time. It's not something he's going to shy away from. Just like he's talked a lot about stuff with, you know, clubhouse things from last year. I think he's, you know, he's a leader of this team, and he'll be a guy who, you know, even if I am concerned, I still feel like I can get it right, that he's going to put in the work to get it done. And you just hope it's been two bad starts and he's able to shake the rust off and keep things going. But just not a great first start at home this season. But we are hoping for a better one tonight before this game that's still supposed to go down. Dylan Cease. Didn't want to ask you about that. I know we talked about him a little bit first episode, but in his first home outing for you, what are you hoping to see out of him?
Yeah, just being a strike thrower, you know, getting ahead in counts, not necessarily worrying about the K's, just eating up innings. The bullpen got taxed the first couple of games, and it would be nice if he went out there and threw 7-8 innings and you only had to rely on one pitcher after him. That would be big for this team moving forward. That would be big to give them a rest day. And you want a stopper like that. You want someone that's a bulldog and able to eat innings. And I think Dylan Cease is going to be leaned on heavily for that today. I'm interested to see Hicks today for the Giants. That is someone who I thought the Padres could have maybe put a claim in. I'm intrigued on his upside. You know, a lifelong reliever who's going to try to start. I mean, we all know the stuff, but I don't know. We'll have to wait. And we talked about fastball issues.
I'm about to say the fastball idea is going to get put to the test. I mean, I think it's technically a sinker, but that thing's moving 102. No,
yeah, they better Good be luck. Prepared to hit velocity tonight, because he will come at you. But then again, he has, you know, tendencies to be wild. So we'll have to wait and see. Dylan Cease, though, I would hope can go six strong tonight at the very least for the Padres.
Yeah, I would just like Cease to, you know, be in a spot where it can be his night is done and we're handing the ball to Cosgrove or Wandy Peralta to start the final four dip town to get to Suarez. Yes. And I really also hope, again, Cease is the guy, and we talked about it last time. In my eyes, he's who you hope is your stopgap. Like, hey, we need a win and we need it right now, and we're going to hand you the ball. That's who you got to hope that Dylan Cease is. And clearly, the stuff is all there to do it. I hope he just goes out there and is able to execute tonight. I think it'll be interesting too to watch his, you know, relationship with Kyle Higashioka. He's getting his first start behind the dish tonight. Higashioka was the pitcher's whisperer over in New York. I mean, every guy raved about him. I mean, I think that was part of the reason why Sanchez got kind of pushed out of New York, is because Higashioka was the guy that everyone wanted to throw to a little bit. So I'll be intrigued to see him back there again. Another San Diego native too, but Cease will be an interesting watch tonight. And to your point too with Hicks, I'm intrigued to watch Hicks too. I thought they paid a lot of money for him, more than I would have conceivably given to him.
Yeah.
And he's had arm issues. So I'm immediately like, can you be a regular starter?
Yeah, exactly right.
Like, is this something that your body can uphold to? And if he can, I mean, the stuff is fantastic. I mean, you've seen him in closing situations for Toronto, for St. Louis. And you're like, you know, he's one of those guys, you sit there and you're like, how do you even hit him? Because when he got 102, when he got a breaking pitch, it's nasty. So I'll be interested to see how the starting experiment goes for him. And again, how we handle that fastball, because as a team that, as we don't think has been great against the fastball here in recent years, going to get put to the test here tonight. So
for sure. And you want to get into that Giants bullpen. You want to get into that bullpen. That's the key to winning this series and key to winning this game. So, long at bats, professional at bats, we're gonna have to see them, and hopefully that's the key to the victory tonight.
Definitely. I think I mean, the Padres the last couple of seasons, again, with their patience, they're good at driving up guys' pitch counts. So if you can do that against Hicks, you know, make him work a little bit more than he wants to. Again, he's just really started being a starter again this year. Maybe the stamina is not where it should be at the beginning of the season, or where it's going to be eventually.
Exactly.
Just work him a little bit, wear him out. And again, if there's a weakness to the Giants pitching staff, it's certainly the bullpen. I mean, we saw it in the first game we played against them. You know, that was evident enough.
We think the Padres have issues. I think the Giants are going to have long-term issues in that regard, but
Giants will certainly have issues in that regard, I think, too.
For sure. I don't know, man. It's you want to get that, you want to at least earn that series split and get that win tonight. So
I think too, that's one thing, you know, last season, so many times there was like, well, we lost this series, but there's so much season left. Like, one loss doesn't matter that much. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to have that mentality. It's like, no. You know, you only get so many divisional games. You only get to see the Giants so many times. Winning these games is important. And especially too, it's dumb as it is, you know, like, you don't want to look back and be like, oh, if we just won this close game against the Giants, we'd be in this, you know, we'd be in the playoffs.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, so coming out here now and, you know, approaching it with a mentality that every game is important, which they have. I believe it was Jose Azokar who 2 days ago made that quote, like, hey, we're taking every game as if it's the most important one we have this season, which is good. And I hope they go out there. Getting 3 or 4 from San Francisco would be huge, because then you're already starting off against, what, you'd be 4-2 in the division to start the year. That's great. Can't ask for much better than that. So no, it's a huge start to be able to, if they can win split, like you said, at the very least, you want that. Getting 3 or 4 would be phenomenal. And that was really my hope and goal for them coming into this series, was to get 3 or 4.
Yeah, no, you have to. You that's the goal. You don't, 500 baseball is not gonna make much of a difference for this team. Your goal should be well above that, and should be to take every series. And that's the mentality that this team needs to have moving forward. So, you know, we'll have to hope that Joe Musgrove is healthy and a vital part of that moving forward, because he is an important part of this team. Although they do have starting pitching depth, it is on the younger side and not experienced as Mr. Musgrove for sure.
Definitely. Well, I think there was one thing before we ended up wrapping up the show today that I felt like was certainly worth talking about. If anyone's been paying attention to the baseball world, the Mets and Brewers have had a little bit of a spat here going on, with it ultimately not maybe hopefully coming to its conclusion of Reese Hoskins getting thrown behind. For anyone who's not familiar with the situation, Reese Hoskins went to the second base, slid into Jeff McNeil. Make your own decisions about what you thought about it. And there's a bit of a spat. Reese Hoskins did make me laugh very hard when he did the cry face to Jeff McNeil. That was pretty hilarious. And then Hoskins today, recording on this on March 30th, went 3 for 3, hit an absolute missile on the left field line for a home run. And in his last at bat, while the Brewers, I believe, were up 3 at the time, they threw behind him towards his head. So, James, I will ask you, what are your thoughts on the situation between these two?
It's just asinine, you know. First off, the slide, I have no issue with it. I'm an older guy, obviously. I grew up in the 80s. We've all seen the memes and the gifs of Hal McRae and taking out second baseman. You know, I'm from the generation where you're standing around the bag, get out of the way. You know, as a middle infielder, you're taught get the out and get your feet. I know he was fumbling the ball or whatever. I didn't see an issue with Hoskins' slide. I thought it was hard-nosed. I thought his approach was well in not getting up and getting in his face. He got up, hard slid, got up, and walked off the field. As far as I'm concerned, if McNeil had an issue with it, he should have pushed and shoved him and did something then. Yelling at him as he's coming across the field is pretty stupid. I don't know. And then throwing at him today after the man goes 3 for 3 and drives in 4 runs is just the epitome of Mets baseball right now, which is a dysfunctional group. I mean, they make the San Diego Padres look like a competent organization, and that in itself says a lot.
Yeah, you know, I will agree with you. I did not have a problem with the slide by Reese Hoskins. He didn't deviate from the baseline. He didn't go out of his way, as there's a picture flurrying around the internet of Jeff McNeil going way out of his way to take someone out. So maybe first off, those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones if they have a problem. That said, again, I don't have a problem with what Hoskins did. He didn't deviate. He stayed in his line.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting up, McNeil getting so mad, which is ridiculous. But the bigger thing to me is like, all right, he goes 3 for 4 on you. It's the 7th inning. And then you throw behind him.
Yeah.
Ron Darling made a great point on SYN New York. He was like, it's way too late to throw at a guy when he's already bashed your brains in. I think that was what the quote was. And it's true. Like, he's already done everything he could to you guys. And now you're going to go with this cop out, like, oh, we're going to throw behind you. And by the way, throwing at someone's head in any situation is bull. I mean, I don't care. You're throwing a ball 96 miles an hour. If you dome someone, you can kill them. So I think that's pretty lame. If you're going to hit someone, do it right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, and the funniest part about it to me, was a guy from the Mets charges Reese Hoskins. He's clearly sprinting after him.
Yeah.
Reese Hoskins doesn't move. And then he gets ejected, that guy. how small do you have to feel where you thought a fight was going to happen because you threw at him? And the man that who's terrorized your team all first two games doesn't flinch when you sprint right after him. So if you're the Mets, you just, as your point, look just foolish. I mean, what a terrible situation on your end where, you know, you're getting mad over, in my opinion, a fine slide. And then when you try to make something happen, the dude doesn't even, you know, give you the time of day to come even step forward to you. He doesn't care.
It's if they had an issue with the slide, they two should have pushed and shoved each other right then and there. It would have been solved right then and there. Maybe they got kicked out of the game. We wouldn't even be talking about this today. No, it would have been
like to handle it a day later, a full day later.
Yes, it's stupid. It's dumb. That's a situation that needs to be handled right then and there. If you have a problem with it, you address it right then and there. That's how you get respect from the other team. That's how you get respect from your teammates. Not yelling at them like you're yelling at a child or something. I mean, what
you know, it's one thing to if you're mad about the slide to do about it something right then and there. It's another thing to wait for when the guy is in the other dugout to then start yelling at him and being like, "Oh, come back out here!" Like, all right, dude, well, he was right there for you. If you wanted him, he was right there.
Exactly. And I hear Mets fans saying, you know, with Hoskins, he ran away and then started, you know. He slid hard. He did his job, and he got up and left. He wasn't mad about the situation.
He wasn't looking for
anything. Why would he escalate the situation? So if
I think that was like perfect stand today. Like, he didn't do anything to escalate again. He got thrown out. A ball was thrown at 96 miles an hour at his head, pretty much, and he didn't move because he was like, "This is ridiculous that we're still on."
Someone who missed all of last year, might I add. It's baseball. It's in the air.
And I don't know. I mean. Again, I thought the slide was fine. I thought the reaction by the Mets and they continued, and then how you culminated with throwing behind him, I thought that was all just ridiculous. But they lose both of their games, and maybe that's what they deserve. So,
and they got two more games in their series. So, this probably isn't going to be the last of this. The way the Mets still have smoke coming out of their ears for some unknown reason.
I don't know. I mean, I'll be interested to see if Milwaukee does anything back. I mean.
That's the point of this is that you escalate into a situation where Milwaukee feels responsible to protect their players and do something to the Mets, and this is how it escalates into
a nasty cycle of things.
Yeah, that's why you should be allowed to plunk a batter on the hip, on the legs, throw at him, send a message, and it's over. That's the old school mentality. That's the way I was taught to play. You don't like the way someone does it. You hit them on the leg the next time up and it's over and it's washed. And that's it. No talking about it. No, nothing. That's it. So this is something that could be really major in the next few days from these two teams.
I know. I mean, again, I think Major League Baseball, if they wanted to, they could fix it and make sure nothing happens by being like, "Hey, 10 game suspension. You can't throw at a guy's head. That's not happening."
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but who knows? That'll be an interesting next 2 days to follow. Even the next series when they play again, I think. I don't know if they'll – maybe they won't.
Yeah.
I forget the schedule. But anyway.
Yeah, I know with this new schedule, I'm sure they'll play each other at some point during the year. But these next two games are going to be heated, especially if the fact that they're not going to see each other very often. They're going to want to leave as the dominant male and assert their dominance on each other. So, and the Mets are starting off 0-2, so they're pissed right now. The 0-2 will start their season.
I agree. Well, I'm hoping that, you know, at the end of the day, more than anything else, back on the Padres end, just to close us out, that, you know, we see some fire to the boys ourselves tonight from San Diego. We see them pick up two wins, at least get a series split, and hopefully take care of business, get a good outing from Dylan Cease tonight. But that's all I'm looking for.
For sure. Hopefully the rain's not a factor. We don't need Cease to go out there, throw two or three innings, and then be an hour or two rain delay, and then we're into the bullpen. That would be catastrophic for both teams. Especially, I mean, obviously the Padres, but we definitely don't want that. We want some clear sky. So we'll have to pray for that. They're reporting that the game should be fine from 4-7 as far as rain is concerned. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to bank on the ways of the National Weather Service. Hopefully they know what they're talking about. So they're the ones we're relying on here. So but anyway, this has been the EBT Padres podcast. Glad you guys can join in with us. Hopefully you're enjoying wherever you're listening to. And make sure to check back with us next week for our next slate of episodes. Me and James are very excited to continue to bring you guys content and talking Padres baseball. And hopefully the next time you hear from us, be a couple more wins in the win column for our Friars. So for James E. Clark, I'm Clark Farenthal. Enjoy your day, folks.